This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump has been roundly criticized for deciding to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, a largely symbolic yet important global pact to address climate change. But many leaders on the state and local level within the United States have decided that they don't need the federal government's cooperation on adhering to the Paris Accord. Dozens of city mayors and state governors across the U.S. have made alliances to keep climate-related promises. After all, even under Democratic leadership, the U.S. federal government was hardly an effective climate leader on the global stage. In the age of Trump, local and state-level efforts to combat greenhouse gas emissions can and must continue, say environmental activists. One of them is my guest, Elizabeth Sawin. She is the co-director of Climate Interactive. Welcome to the program, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we covered what happened with the Paris Accord and what the impact of Trump's decision to do so would be. As I mentioned, it is a largely sort of symbolic agreement, yet it was, you know, very important for the countries of the world to come together and say they're taking this issue seriously. And we as a country have faced tremendous outrage internationally for what Trump has done. Tell us what happened literally on the, you know, very soon after, maybe even hours after the decision was announced to remove the U.S. from the Paris Accord. How have local and state level leaders responded?
Yeah, well, really good question. And first of all, I would quibble a little with the word symbolic. I think the Paris Accord was voluntary, but it was more than symbolic in that it was a long-term signal to citizens and investors and businesses that the United States was serious about addressing climate change. And so with that serious signal gone, as you're saying, everyone is now turning to what we call the subnational level. So cities, states, communities, businesses, colleges, and universities to really pick up that big gap left behind by the federal government. And so you're right that in each of these sectors, we're seeing hundreds of cities. As of the last count I saw, I think it was 247 cities have joined something called the Mayor's Compact or the Climate Mayor's Compact. So those are cities who say that they're going to rise to the ambition of the Paris Agreement. Then there's about 13 states in something called they formed something called the U.S. Climate Alliance, and they're also saying they're aligning themselves with the goals established in Paris. Around 200 universities and colleges, and all of these numbers are increasing, you know, by the hour as new entities sign on, but around 200 colleges and universities saying the same thing. And last I looked, over 1,000 businesses, some very small and some of the largest, most recognizable businesses in the country, saying they're aligned with this level of ambition ensconced in the Paris Agreement.
So how would this actually look? I mean, you know, it's cleaner, more elegant when you have one sort of leader representing an entire country that can say, we'll join other leaders on a global level. I mean, is the EU and other global entities, are they supposed to now bring to the table hundreds upon hundreds of individual leaders in the United States?
I think it's a little early to know what kind of form that will take. We do see leaders like Michael Bloomberg saying that, you know, he wants to in some way represent all of these subnational entities and continue to engage at the level of the international agreements. We just saw the governor of California was in China having discussions about joint action on climate change. And so I think we don't know exactly the form it will take, but I expect that there will be more of this sort of exchange between states and cities and businesses and counterparts around the world. And I think the other side of it is, you know, what will it look like here?
Right.
And the work of building a low carbon society happens on the ground in communities Anyway, that was true even with the Paris Agreement.
Right, and I was going to say, in the absence of strong leadership in the United States, a lot of local and state level activity had already been happening. I mean, President Obama may see the Paris Accord as his crowning achievement on climate change, but that came near the end of his 8-year-long tenure. A lot of people complained that it just was very late in the game, that the US just still could have done so much more and didn't do enough when we, had a chance of actually saving the planet. Now, the 2-degree mark of warming is likely already something that's inevitable. So, in that vacuum left by the federal government, even under Obama, hadn't a lot of states and cities already been taking it upon themselves to do a lot of local climate organizing?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And most of the cities and states that we see joining these lists had already done work to do analysis and estimate how much of their emissions they could reduce and made plans for doing it. I think that's what's given them the confidence to so quickly step forward and join these different coalitions.
Right. They'd
But at
been
the
doing
same
it all along
time,
anyway, so.
yeah, I mean, they have been doing it all along, and there really are things that are best done at the national level. And so those are things like vehicle fuel efficiency standards that it's not really feasible for individual states to set those.
But what about states
Anything.
like California, which has such a massive economic clout? Often, when California insists or has a change of laws insisting on certain product standards, manufacturers automatically follow suit anyway because they're not going to make cars for California and then different kinds of cars for the rest of the country, right?
Yeah, I mean that's a good point, and it's just a shame that that's what we're going to have to, put our hopes in, when really most appropriately we'd have national leadership at that level. And so I do think it's important that everyone continue to really lobby for a reversal at the federal level, whether it's with the next round of elections or like it's a valuable set of tools and policies, and we really can't achieve our goals probably only at the city and state level. At the same time, right now, probably some of our best opportunities to make rapid progress in the meantime, is at that more local level.
Right. Some have even suggested that Trump's pulling out of the Paris Accord ought to be considered a crime against humanity and an impeachable offense. Well, there was a lot of depression, mass pessimism in the days when that announcement was thought to was going to come, and then when it was finally made, people's social media feeds were filled with doom and gloom. This is it, this is the nail in humanity's coffin. But what can climate justice, what can climate justice alliances at the state and local level actually look like? You've written an article where you lay out the positive impacts that are already happening and can happen in a piece that you wrote on your blog. Want to see US climate progress? Support city and state leaders and the grassroots groups who hold them accountable. So, what could it actually look like?
Yeah, and this is very connected to what you were just saying about the fact that already, even under the Obama administration, we saw these aggressive movements towards climate neutrality being led by cities and states. And really, the motivation for that I see as I work with leaders around the country, the motivation is, of course, the long-term climate, but it's also the immediate short-term benefits that local leaders see will come from these efforts to build a strong clean energy economy. So, just to give you a few examples of those, some of the most pronounced benefits are in the area of health. There are deaths from air pollution, premature deaths in this country every year as a result of use of fossil fuels. One study from the University of Michigan just estimated that 52,000 premature deaths per year can be attributed to the emissions and pollution that comes from fossil fuel driven power plants. So there's one example. The transition to clean energy would eliminate or greatly reduce those premature deaths. And then you also have illnesses like asthma, which is connected to fossil fuel pollution. And So any steps that reduce just, you know, tailpipes, transportation emissions around the areas where people live, and power plant emissions are going to have really significant payoffs in terms of health. The other side of the health equation has to do with physical activity. So in our health system, it's been estimated we spend something like 11% of our health dollars on diseases that are related to a lack of physical activity. Well, some of the best solutions to climate change are to get people out of their cars and get them walking and cycling to get to where they need to go. And so that's the kind of thing that cities and states are seeing, are these win-win situations where we create a clean energy economy and we get gains in health. We also would expect new jobs in the clean energy economy, new economic opportunities, and generally greener, more beautiful, more desirable places to live.
Right. There was a report that recently came out about one wind turbine company offering to train coal miners for free. And it's really interesting to see so much. So many people who profess to be pro-business, you know, and believe in trickle-down economics, just unwilling to see the financial potential in renewable energy initiatives, possibly because fossil fuel money has helped to influence the debate so greatly that they might even be undermining their own ability to profit from renewable energy, right?
Well, I mean, that's one part of it and shouldn't be minimized, is the influence of money from the fossil fuel industry on our policies. Another side, though, is how we go about making decisions and how we define the problem of climate change. Because if we're looking at it narrowly as just a matter of carbon dioxide emissions, then it's really a question about energy technologies and energy security. And if we're not making the connections to health, then we don't have health leaders in the room, and we also don't have health budgets as part of the discussion. So a lot of the types of solutions that I'm talking about require innovation where either at the city level or the state level, people can figure out how to put together their priorities. So, you know, if the spending has to come out of the energy budget or a transportation budget, but the benefits are in the health budget, most cities and states aren't really aligned to make that happen easily, even though for the community as a whole, it might be the best possible solution that would save money. They're usually, you know, separate conversations in separate budgets and separate buildings. And so a lot of where I see the opportunity is reshaping those conversations to get more people in the discussion and more both political will and budgetary resources aligned.
So essentially we need a holistic approach to climate health, to the planet's health and people's health that that go hand in hand.
Yeah, we even use a word to describe all that to try to help people see the creative opportunities. We call it multi-solving, right? The idea of solving multiple problems at the same time. And at first, it's a little counterintuitive because these each are big problems in their own, whether it's equity or health or climate change. And what we're saying is, counterintuitively, maybe those problems are easier to solve if we tackle them together than what we're currently doing, which is working on them in our silos.
Well, Elizabeth, give it a website for Climate Interactive where people can find more information about the work you do.
Yeah, it's just climateinteractive.org, and you'll see our work on multi-solving and lots of other work on the transition to clean energy.
That's climateinteractive.org. We'll also post a link to your article about how states and cities are joining in the fight to keep the Paris Accords alive. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thanks. I enjoyed talking with you.
My guest is Elizabeth Sawin, co-director of Climate Interactive. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.